Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded October 22nd, 2025. Well, Eve Engler's campaign for the NDP leadership is enjoying strong support from the rank and file, while facing stiff headwinds from the party's entrenched apparatchiks and donor class supporters. That was to be expected, but this week's exclusion of the most Labour-friendly candidate's participation in the Canadian Labour Congress Workers Together Forum is more surprising. And the CLC are not the only nominally left working class agents working against Engler. Eve Engler is an activist and author, disruptor, parent, and practitioner of political conscience. Eve's written a dozen books and countless essays detailing Canada's long history of perfidious foreign policy. His interventions with public officials are legendary, as is his stalwart defense of the universal principles of humaneness. Since announcing his challenge for the vacant seat at the head of the New Democratic Party, Eve has met the considerable conditions of candidacy demanded by the NDP and more, but now faces the greater hurdle to his race, acceptance by the establishment left in the party and in the country. Today, Eve Engler, taking the fight inside the tent. Well, welcome back to the program, Eve.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's always my pleasure. Of course, now, Eve, first the breach, and now the CLC. What is the Canadian Labour Congress reasoning in keeping you off the platform of their event going on tonight?
Well, there is no stated reasoning. They haven't responded to us. They didn't reach out. My assumption is that because we are yet to be vetted by the NDP brass, which, you know, there's nothing in the rules for the NDP that says that the, you know, outside organizations can't invite whoever they want to invite to speak at different different forums. The NDP rules do have quite a clear description of what has to happen if you want to participate in either of the two official NDP debates. And you actually have to pay, you have to give the nomination signatures, you have to pay $50,000, and obviously you have to be vetted to participate in the first leadership official debate on November 27th. And there's another one in February. So the CLC, it's not surprising that they would do this. They obviously a fairly bureaucratic organization and are close with the NDP brass. There's also a pretty deep anti-Palestinian history within the CLC. Yeah, so it's there's no officially stated rationale.
Well, they've got five candidates on the stage tonight. It's a crowded field. I would suppose awkward for a debate format. Having a sixth one there makes it even more so. So, Eve, why aren't you? You've done all these other things. You've raised a ton of money. You've got a huge amount of support at the ground level. You've got volunteers that each one of these candidates, I would be surprised if taken all together, can match. Why don't you take that final step? Why don't you, okay, get vetted and then make yourself eligible for events that the party is sponsoring and be treated as an official candidate by the press and outside organizations like the Canadian Labour Congress?
Simply put, because we believe the NDP vetting committee, a three-person committee, will just vet out the 1,000-person volunteer campaign. They will just block us from participating in the race. And we want to make it harder for them to do that. And there's a whole bunch of ways in which we can make it harder for them to do that. Quite frankly, honestly, you know, participating in these debates, this was a discussion. If we could get on the CLC forum, that would have made it harder for the NDP to kick us out. If we could have participated in the, like I was invited to participate in a riding, electoral association event that took place a week ago or so, that would have also made it harder for the NDP to block us. So that was our hope and at one point even somewhat of maybe of an expectation with regards to the local associations. Conversely, of course, not participating in those events sort of isolates us, which is not good. from the standpoint of getting through vetting. Now, but the other part of the getting through vetting is the challenging the vetting process itself. So we want to discredit the vetting process as undemocratic, as historically very anti-Palestinian, as a way to make it harder for them to just block the campaign. Also, just attention. Quite honestly, the more attention there is to the whole question of the vetting and, you know, whether it makes it so they can't just kick us out quietly. I think we're in a situation where it's very difficult for the the NDP won't expect to be able to just sort of suppress the campaign without people being pretty, you know, aware of it and a lot of people being pretty outraged about it. Another point in understanding all this is a question, quite honestly, it's a bit tricky to talk about, but is what happens if we do get blocked and how long can we sustain a alternative challenge of the whole NDP leadership race? The reality is we're still, I believe it's 5.5 months away from the vote. The vote doesn't happen until the end of March. So if we were expelled from the race today, the ability to sustain 5.5 months of an alternative parallel campaign is difficult, quite honestly. So that's also a factor in our assessment. The fact that we have a policy platform, very comprehensive platform drafted by 45 volunteers, researchers, dozens more were involved in you know, laying it out and translating it and reaching out to different indigenous and other researchers, outside researchers and stuff. We want to get our ideas out as much as possible, you know, before we would be expelled and influence the whole tenor of the NDP leadership debate. So there's a whole bunch of these factors that go into this. There's no real, this is guesswork. I don't presume to have like the exact right strategy here. It's not some, you know, I've never done this before. and it's not just me. There's many people who are, you know, trying to assess the situation on a day-to-day basis and how to exactly make our decisions based upon a series of different calculations that go into it. The most important point for anyone who's you know, wondering about, you know, these questions or hearing these like bad faith critiques of it is that it's absolutely absurd notion that we wouldn't want to get through vetting. Obviously, we want to have access to the NDP contact list so we could be sending emails, so we'd be phoning people to articulate our ideas, to announce our events, to help, you know, fundraise. We also obviously want to be part of the debates, right? We want to be, so we don't want to have the ability to writing associations or the CLC or any other, or for that matter, the official debates. We obviously want to be part of that. Additionally, we want to be able to provide the tax credits that come with the official status. So meaning the donors get a significant share of their donation in terms of a tax credit. So we absolutely want to be vetted. We're not doing this for any other reason than concern about the undemocratic vetting process and a calculation of how much impact we can have on the debate, on the race, right now versus after potentially being denied or getting through. So it's you know, we definitely want to be vetted in. This is not our preferred strategy, but this is one that I think is the prudent strategy.
Well, you've written an article too about this at your website, eveangler.com. CLC, please include most pro-worker NDP leadership hopeful. In that article, you mentioned too that this event that the Labour Congress is holding sometime later today as we speak, that they're not providing any questioning in French. The idea that the five candidates, Abby Lewis, the highest profile among them, are not capable enough in the other official language, Canada's other official language, Is does this signal that the Labour Congress and its friends in the high echelon of the NDP party have are surrendering Quebec for in the near future, at least?
Potentially. It definitely shows the CLC is supposed to be bilingual. Of course, it represents, you know, it's affiliated with the FTQ and it represents workers in Quebec as well. So the decision, which was reported on by Le Devoir, that to not have any questions in French, as of a couple days ago, according to Le Devoir, there was a plan was to ask each candidate a question in French. And I guess it was decided, presumably under pressure from the NDP, that the candidates, either all of them or most of them, were not adept at responding to a question in French. And so they decided to remove this question in French. And that's what Le Devoir, is kind of the scandal that Le Devoir is focusing on, that there's been so little French in this race. I, of course, would be happy to respond to a question or, for that matter, multiple questions in French. And on Monday, we're doing what appears to be the first French language event, all French event of this campaign, where I'll be doing a talk about degrowth, militarism, and capitalism with Alain Deneau, who is a well-known Quebec, doesn't actually live in Quebec now, but long lived in Quebec, author. And so that the notion that the NDP or that the CLC would exclude the only Quebec candidate who speaks French from a forum, that they then excluded French from that forum, is not a very good look from the standpoint of the CLC or of the NDP in terms of its seriousness, in terms of about a quarter of the country's population, of course, has as its mother tongue the French language. So that's a very bad look. And there's lots of people within the establishment of the party, within the establishment of the media, who have talked about in the past weeks and months the importance that the next leader of the party speaks French. A lot of those, including this one a CBC a power panel with you know, Chantal Hébert and Aletha Raj and
the rest,
Ivetson, or they had a whole discussion about the NDP leadership race, and they talked about the importance of French, and they just exclude my name from the discussion, even though I know Chantal Hébert, for instance, knows I speak French. I've spoke to her in French, and so. There's this dynamic that I happen to have this very prized asset that the NDP brass say they want in any leadership candidate, and yet they're going to pretty extreme lengths to I guess kind of not certainly to not talk about my French skills, but also to protect the other candidates from a simple question in la langue de Molière.
Well, and the Prime Minister himself, Mark Carney, his French skills are questionable, to be charitable. And the ruling claque at the NDP, they didn't do so well in the last election go round. Actually, the party was absolutely wiped out, and there was a time that their presence in Quebec was very prominent. That they had, I think it was 2/3 of their national seats or something. Am I getting that right? Were in Quebec.
Yeah. Well, the Orange Wave. There was about it was 50 or so seats in Quebec.
I was at your appearance here in Victoria last month, and I buy one of your books every time I see you. I still haven't gotten them all, but I'm really happy about this one because it happens to be your first one, playing left wing from rink rat to student radical. You talk about going to school you live in Montreal, but going to school at university in Concordia. and all the trouble that you got up to. And in your chapter, Alternatives to Capitalism, I'm reading that the social democratic movements and political parties have been by far the most successful of all the anti-capitalist currents in the last 150 years. Now, you've been writing on this vein for a very long time, so you are prepared, and you're preparing, you have prepared a policy now that you're putting forward on this platform. What about some of your policy points, starting maybe at the most easily digestible for those that don't share your long lineage of study in these matters?
Well, some of the easiest digestible were our shut down the tar sands, our abolish tuition and write off student debt, reduce military spending, build 100,000, minimum 100,000 units of social housing and co-op housing each year, turn the real estate investment trusts into co-ops, so take the housing crisis seriously. We have a whole 10-point plan on Palestine that's pretty elaborated, that would lessen Canadian complicity in Israel's crimes. And then the whole platform is quite extensive, comprehensive, that goes into a whole different kind of macro vision of an alternative to the current capitalist order.
Well, and again, at your website, eveengler.com, you've got a slew of articles coming out. You mentioned your upcoming event with Alain Deneau. That is contained, the details of which, in your article, Why My Candidacy Upends NDP Leadership Race. In Playing Left Wing, there's a terrific photograph on the cover of you being restrained by the, Sûreté de Montreal or whoever it is, looking straight into the camera, reminiscent of George Galway being carried with each limb akimbo through the air some years ago. But you're talking about this very thing, student activism and the reaction of the authorities, not only the police, but the university authorities, to challenges. And in this case, in your case, with your arrest way back when in Concordia, aptly enough, it was concerning Israel and its current prime minister and longtime prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu. You want to talk a little bit about this upcoming event, and that's on the 29th, University Repression of Student Activism, and how this is a full circle in some sense.
Yeah, well, first of all, say we have events coming up, two events in Montreal, then a tour in the Maritimes, and then another tour in Southern Ontario, sort of throughout November and into mid-November. On the event in Montreal about student activism, the repression of student activism, I'm going to recount my story, which you're alluding to, that it's in that book, which is I was elected to the Concordia Student Union in 2002, and we had a very activist-oriented student union. It was the fourth year of very left-wing, clearly the most left-wing activist-oriented student unions in the country, probably in North America, and that was the Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights was established in Montreal at largely at Concordia a few years prior, and it became a kind of important network of Palestine solidarity on campus. And basically the Zionist forces wanted to shut that down, and they referred to it as the Concordia as the quote viper's nest of the Palestine solidarity world. And so Izzy Asper, the Asper Foundation, Izzy Asper, of course, was the head of Can West, a major media mogul that really consolidated a bunch of the newspapers, which is ultimately become what's now Post Media. He organized a speaking tour of Netanyahu, I don't know how many, a handful of cities across the country. And at Concordia, the Asper Foundation pushed to have their event downtown, right in the main hall building, which is right downtown. And the Concordia security said this was not a good idea. At this point, Netanyahu, who was the former prime minister, was viewed as a very right-wing anti-Palestinian figure in Israeli politics. And they tried to have the event, and they failed. There was a big protest, and the cops end up
pepper spraying people inside the university, and the windows get smashed, and cops arrest people, and they, refer to it as a riot. I don't know if I would go that far, but it was, it was a very dynamic, boisterous protest. Netanyahu was not able to speak, and huge repression comes in the aftermath of that. And like I said, I was in the student union, and we were very much targeted. I was ultimately a charge within the internal tribunal process of the university with four different things to do with the Netanyahu protest, to do with handing out leaflets about the free trade area of the Americas, because in the aftermath of the Netanyahu protest, they brought in restrictions on political life on campus, and so they and I they claimed I violated that, and then for stickering, they got the student tribunalists. This was, all detailed, but they got student tribunalists to basically agree to suspend me for one semester under duress, which the two of the three tribunalists came out the next day, say they were basically pressured by the administrator to do that. And then the suspension, they said I didn't fulfill my suspension because I was elected to the student council the next year, and we had a legal ruling that said I was allowed on campus as a representative of student, elected representative of students. And then they sent in the cops at a student council meeting in September or the start of the year to arrest me. And that's that photo you see on the front of that of the book. Was I believe it was. It was a whole bunch. I don't remember how many, but a dozen or so cop cars sent to arrest me, and they then expelled me after saying I didn't fulfill my suspension another time. By law in Quebec, an expulsion is actually just a 5-year suspension, but I was effectively kicked out of school for six, I guess, essentially 6 years. And it was just a sign of the repression that that exists, and we've seen a lot of that. I mean, the last 2 years, now we're in a situation where the Concordia is hiring they're hiring a security firm with former Israeli soldier that heads it, and a security firm that works for the Federation here in Montreal, the Jewish Federation here in Montreal, which of course is a sponsor of CEJA. And that, obviously it's a way to intimidate students, and there's been this huge spending on policing on campus, and Concordia is, not close to as bad as what's happened in some other places. So the repression of student activism, 2 years in to this live streamed Holocaust, and there's still a targeting of those who are, opposing their university's complicity. I should also just maybe end on with this point is that there's, just last week on October 7th, I guess maybe that's 10 days ago now, there was a student strike here in Quebec. I think it was over 80,000 students voted. Federations or associations represent 80,000 students voted to go on strike. The demo in downtown Montreal was like a good 3,000 plus. So, despite the repression, there is still quite a dynamic and active student mobilization. The votes, it's remarkable to see the votes calling for boycotting. Concordia vote, it was like 800, I forget the exact number, 870 in favor and 54 against. It's just, the numbers are just completely overwhelming. Now, among the donor class at Concordia, unfortunately, there is still, the donor class is still very much older and very pro Israel. And so there's a lot of pressure on the administrators to suppress students and to not concede to their very legitimate demands.
Well, Eve, we're at the break point. I want to take a brief break here. I'm going to feature some music by David Rovics. We'll come back and look more broadly at what your policy platform is regarding Canadian foreign policy as it applies to Israel, of course, and what's been going on. And there's been some very big developments just today, but over the latest weeks, you've been campaigning against tax breaks for donations to Israel from Canada. There's an enormous number of very well-heeled organizations and foundations that have been aiding in that, and their fortunes are reversing, at least for the moment. But first, David Rovics. Moscow, Tokyo, New York. Guerrilla Radio is everywhere, everywhere, all the time.
Chicago, Helsinki, Cape Town, Sao Paulo, you're working two jobs and living in a tent, when a house costs $1 million and you can't pay the rent, when politicians say they'll help but it keeps getting worse each time the landlord lobby pulls the strings of the purse, when the human right to housing isn't even part of the debate, you know you're living in a failed state. Millions of citizens are spending half their lives locked up in a prison for trying to survive, when laws must be broken just to have a place to stay, when the prisons pay the senators to look the other way, if you have to be a criminal to put food upon your plate, you know you're living in a failed state. When you're facing climate breakdown, when the trees are all on fire, when half the country's underwater, when a climate change denier runs the nation, and the opposition party votes for oil rigs and pipelines, this is not so much a country as it is a corporation buckling under its weight, you know you're living in a failed state. When your nation is an empire facing daily blowback, and the only thing your leaders can think to do is attack, bipartisan consensus that we need to spend $700 billion before the year's end on a military budget to make America great, you know you're living in a failed state. When almost every day some psycho with a gun has to open fire on a crowd before it's done, when a music festival becomes a free fire zone and all they can say is it's okay now he was acting alone, buy some armor, pray to God, and hide behind a gate, you know you're living in a failed state. You know you're living in a failed state.
And welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, I'm speaking today with Eve Engler. You know Eve as an activist and author, disruptor, parent, and practitioner of political conscience. He's written a dozen books and countless essays dealing with Canada's long history of perfidious foreign policies, and his interventions with public officials are legendary, as is his stalwart defense of our universal principle of humaneness. He has announced his challenge for the vacant seat at the head of the New Democratic Party, that same that was eviscerated in the last election and almost entirely wiped out, in fact, losing its status as a party in Canada's parliament. But his race is facing now the headwinds of resistance from the entrenched so-called left actors in the party itself and in the media generally. We mentioned even the first half, your exclusion from the Canadian Labour Congress. In the press here in Canada that has been so absent during the 2 years of the Holocaust that has been unfolding before our eyes, if only we open our telephones, in Palestine, in Gaza, there are some left elements here that have covered it somewhat. I was certainly surprised that one of those, The Breach, an online publication, has come out, though, rather snottily against you and your candidacy, you who have written so much about that situation and many others that one would assume The Breach would be very supportive of. Do you want to talk about The Breach breaching what would seem to be the left side of the spectrum to carry its whale-like body over to the other side?
Yeah, it was a very malicious attack from Martin Lukács and Desmond Cole. We've reached out to Elections Canada. We spent more than a month setting up our bank account and following all the rules of Elections Canada. And we also have the CEO in writing of the NDP agreeing with our plan that had been set up with Elections Canada in terms of how we're began our fundraising. So it's, you know, this flow, it starts from the NDP brass trying to discredit the campaign and picked up, of course, by the fed to the National Post and Toronto Star